Hi, everyone, and welcome to Televisions, the podcast, an audio companion to the Televisions website and a show made by Anglophiles for Anglophiles. I am Lacey Barger-Miles, and I'm the editor here at Televisions. And joining me, as per usual, is my co-host, Miss Annie Bundle.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today, other than recovering from COVID?
I've been better. The lesson here, everyone, is if you ever hear me say on this show that I do not have COVID while I'm ill, just don't come anywhere near me because I absolutely have COVID. Greg gave me COVID. I love you, honey, but I'm just not over this. I mean, well, I talked about this the last episode we recorded, which thank God we recorded early. About Greg's doing fine, by the way. He's just bounced back like nothing, like nobody's business. And I am feeling a lot better for anybody who's interested. But if there is just some extra coughing or sneezing or something during this episode, just know that it's me and I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'm still, I may one day recover fully from COVID, but who knows? Anyway, what are we talking about this week other than your health?
other than me talking about myself, as is the norm for the show. We are talking about one of the, I have to admit, odder additions to the PBS lineup. Not odd bad, but odd in the sense that, like, I don't know, I was sort of surprised when PBS picked it up and I didn't know very much about it at all. And that is, I don't even know really how to, a comedy drama series Funny Woman, which I apologize in advance. I will absolutely refer to it as Funny Girl at some point during the show. I can't help it. It's Pavlovian. I was raised on Barbara, blame my mother. But also, welcome our Funny Woman recapper, Sophie Brookover, to the show to help us talk about this new series and also help me rest my voice a little bit. Hi, Sophie.
Hi, Lacey. As ever, delighted to be here. Thank you for having me. And, you know, to be able to give your voice a rest, you know, that's a mitzvah. I'm into that. I agree with you regarding this being a slightly odd choice. Like, I'm very happy that they made it. But yeah, this is a show that, like, very frankly addresses in a much, much more straightforward and frank way, like not within, under the umbrella of we are talking about reproductive health, than Call the Midwife. That's the only thing I can think of on PBS that I watch regularly that also addresses those issues. But it's like sex, gender, class, like all those things, and race.
And comedy.
Yes, and it's funny. That's the other thing.
Since I suspect that a lot of people have probably not tried this show yet because it is on the same night as two other very popular shows.
Right.
We all go to bed early now. I'm suspecting the show will find a lot of its success on streaming maybe rather than on broadcast. But like maybe for the people, sum up Funny Woman, because I knew nothing about this show going into it, which was kind of fun, but also I wish I'd known a little bit more.
Got it.
I didn't know a lot about this show. I'd sort of seen like it in passing as a Sky Max show. And then I found out from back channels here at PBS that we were going to pick it up and that it was going to be the 10 p.m., but it was under embargo. And then out of the blue, in the middle of a piece that I was editing that Sophie had written, she literally put in parentheses, "Will no streaming service bring me Funny Woman?" And I literally stared at it for like 2 minutes going, she doesn't actually mean that. She means the show that, well, okay, A, I found my recapper, and B, apparently she knows all about this show and she's really into it.
I'd literally never heard of it until we picked it up.
So you are therefore our expert and therefore should explain the show to our audience.
Sure. That was a really fun, my prophetic trailer watching habit, I guess. Funny Woman is based on a novel by Nick Hornby called Funny Girl, and it had to be right. Sorry. I know, Lacey. Please, you know what you can do is send just like a gentle letter to the editor. Dear Mr. Nick Hornby, What are you doing to me?
It's like, have you watched Barbara? What are you doing?
Yeah.
There is one funny girl.
Okay. Honestly, the fact that it's called Funny Woman is the same reason why the Great British Bake Off is called the Great British Baking Show.
Exactly. Because that's exactly right.
Because they were going to get, because Funny Girl was like, oh no, you call yourself Funny Girl and we are going to sue your Anyway.
Yeah, pre-existing IP reasons is the reason. So Nick Hornby, if you haven't read Funny Girl, you may well be familiar with prior novels, which have then been adapted to screens large and small that he's written, including Fever Pitch, About a Boy, and probably most famously and most beloved by me personally, High Fidelity.
I love High Fidelity.
Love, love, love High Fidelity. I will say that when you reread that book, when I reread that book, just a few years ago, in preparation for recapping the short-lived one-season wonder Hulu adaptation of it, which was wonderful, by the way, and shame on you, Disney, for canceling it. The show was better than the book. And he said the same in interviews, which I think that's very much points in his favor, in my opinion. Anyway, so Funny Woman is about a young woman named Barbara Parker, who is from Blackpool, which for those of you who are not super into British geography is in the north of England. And if you are from these United States of America, I think a good way to conceptualize that is think of all the unpleasant and unfair stereotypes that people who are from the north of this country have about people from the south of this country. Just flip that on its head, and that is how the people from London in this show behave towards people like Barbara, who is from Blackpool, which is like a seaside resort town in the north of England. And so that's... She's a very beautiful and plucky young lady who has been raised by a single father. Her mother abandoned them when she was quite young. And her father's sister, whose name is spelled, we would pronounce it Marie, but they pronounce it Mari, so that's how I'm going to pronounce it. Her father, George, and her auntie, Mari, have raised her, and she wins a beauty contest handily and then decides, you know what? I'm going to go seek my fortune in London. And off she goes. That's basically the rest of the show is her seeking her fortune in London to, various ups and downs that she has to endure socially and employment wise and in romance. And those are the things that happen. So today we're only talking about the first three episodes. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
That is correct.
So I will do my very, very best to refrain, because I have seen the whole series and I don't want to like taint our episodes 1 through 3 with information from episodes 4 through 6. I will do my very best.
That's why I can't watch ahead when I recap.
I understand.
I have only watched through episode 3. So basically.
Yeah, I've only watched through episode 3, mostly because I watched it last night and wanted to go to bed.
That's fair. I embrace sleep.
Not because the show is bad or anything, but like I said, we're old ladies now. Bedtime is important.
We're old and you're recovering from a terrible disease that makes you exhausted. You do not need to justify that, please.
Yeah. I have to say that, like, honestly, I really like this show. I don't know about Lacey obviously you really like this show because I read your recaps and I know you really like the show. But one of the things about this show that really struck me when I first started watching it was how much it fit with Miss Scarlet and the Duke and All Creatures Great and Small. And that to me is so surprising, because one of the problems that PBS has kind of had is finding a third show to kind of go with those first two. It's tried several different kinds of things. It's put Around the World in 80 Days, which was kind of that was fun, but it wasn't like, it didn't quite really fit. It was sort of an adventure thing. It keeps going back to Vienna Blood, which is a mystery show that's a period mystery, but also is a little like not quite the same thing. It's more traditional with the two men, and it's more, it doesn't quite have the same feel to it. This really has all of the woman in a man's world of Miss Scarlet. And it has all of the northerner comes south and is a fish out of water of All Creatures. And that same sort of, like, you know how James is always sort of pushing, like, you know, Siegfried to do the more modern thing in All Creatures, you know, Barbara, or Sophie, as she's called in London, is sort of pushing, you know, the modern thing in this show in a way, in the same sort of way, even though she's kind of the weirdo northerner. So I really feel like this is a show that's got both of those sort of combined together, and it's also a period drama, and it's also a costume, and it's also a costume drama, and it's got all of it sort of mixed together. And I really feel like these three together are a set. And I really like that. Now, I know that Funny Woman season 2 only just started filming.
Yeah.
So that we are, the chance of Funny Woman season 2 coming back next January is basically nil. Like,
right.
We will, if PBS brings back season 2, which I do actually think it will, it won't come back this time next year, which I think is actually kind of tragic, because I think these three work together so well.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can hold out some hope, because the second season order was for 4 episodes, which they should complete more quickly. But, you know, only time will tell, obviously. But yeah, no, I think that your points about, you know, fish out of water and, you know, gender stuff, all of that, and it being like a more contemporary costume piece, all of the, and of course, it's a workplace show. That's the other thing, which I think that there's sort of an endless appetite for that among viewers. I agree. I think that's a very nice set of three that work together really well. And I have enjoyed so much about it. Where would you, like, I wrote down a bunch of themes. Can I, like, just read those aloud?
Absolutely.
And then we'll get to them in whatever order. Like, the order isn't isn't significant, because I literally just jotted these down. Okay. So as previously mentioned, some of these will be previously mentioned. So gender and sexuality, race, class / geography / accent, the issue of expectations versus dreams versus reality, why Barbara is so easy to root for. Like, she is hilariously funny, and I love when the show really shows us that. Like, it doesn't just assert that she's funny, it shows her being funny. I really like that. You know, her naivete and sort of like inability to read certain cues from people. And sometimes that is not a problem at all. Sometimes it's a strength. And as she improves as a reader of those social cues, she uses it to her advantage in some really clever strategic ways, which I loved. I loved watching her do that, because it speaks to, without asserting, it simply shows us what native intelligence she has. Like, regardless of the fact that we can assume left school pretty early, you know, is not somebody who entertained notions of going to university, and yet is obviously very bright, very quick, has terrific instincts. So those are the main ones that I jotted down. However you would like to address them, whatever order, let's do it.
Honestly, the thing that really got me about the gender stuff, especially with her aunt.
Yes.
Her aunt really truly thinks that her job is to stay home.
Yes.
And he's 100% willing to abuse her and manipulate her into it.
Yes.
And there's that whole thing in the beginning with the guy who wants to with the
best looking butcher in Blackpool.
Yes.
Which obviously is every woman's goal, to land such a fellow.
I genuinely love that. We only get by the third episode, we only really sort of get to the beginning of where we very clearly are going to have this sort of love triangle where she's dating Clive, but Dennis, who is already married, is very clearly in love with her.
Yeah.
And so we haven't really gotten into that, but I do have to say that the whole thing with the erectile dysfunction, I mean, that all of that was just brilliant. And such a thing that I would not expect to see on a show on PBS.
No, same. And wouldn't have expected, you know, as she describes them, not entirely inaccurately, a load of posh boys wearing tweed and smoking pipes. I wouldn't have expected any of those subjects to be things that would sneak their way into TV at the time, even in a comedy, which I think is definitely like that's the mode of TV that would be easiest for them to do, because, you know, you can pivot really quickly from something that's ever so slightly outré or risque to a joke, you know, something that's a little more easier for people like Auntie Mari, who's not sure about all the cuddling, which... Listeners, if you have not seen this show, the cuddling that Auntie Mari is not sure about is literally one very chaste closed mouth kiss. Like, that's what she's concerned about. And yet this is the era of carry-on films where, you know, like women are, there's just bare boobs all over the place in those movies.
I mean, the thing is that I British television was always way more sexy than American television. Like, putting like that sort of bedroom scene where they're all romping under the covers and they pop up is very much like of the time.
Right.
The sort of thing you would see on British television for quote unquote sex, which I really love, but and is not the thing that you would, you know, in America, they literally had like twin beds that were on either side of the bedroom.
Yeah.
But I really, I also loved the fact that this very much sort of reminded you that British television wasn't afraid of sex in a way that American television was.
Yeah, that was pretty new information for me. Like, even though I grew up watching a bunch of British TV, I realize now, of course, that was, you know, through several layers of gatekeeping. You know, it was British comedy on PBS.
Yes.
And it was largely sketch comedy like Monty Python and like shows like Blackadder. Do you know what I mean? But like not what Jim and Barbara is, which is a comedy about modern love.
Yeah.
So they do. I loved that the to just like to back up slightly, she winds up after considerable trial and error for, you know, a show that is only going to have six episodes in the first season. You know, she eventually manages to land a lead role on a two-hander sitcom. So it's just her character and her boyfriend, who eventually is her husband, character. And it's just the two of them sort of navigating their lives together alongside larger social issues, which Dennis Mahindra, who is the like creator, producer, and eventually director of the show, and his writers, Bill and Tony, you know, and Clive to a degree, all talk about like really frankly, you know, we want to bring in like gender, sexuality, race, class, all these things. It's notable that the team that's creating this show in like a hands-on way every day, I'm not talking about like the executive level, but like, so Dennis is Indian, he's English and Indian and very posh, like very well-educated, plummy accent, went to Cambridge, etc. The two writers are Bill and Tony. Bill is gay and is about as out as he possibly could be safely in that era. And he's played by Matthew Beard, who plays Max, the, you know, young British neurologist on Vienna Blood, if that's a thing that you watch. And he's like his best friend, Tony. The two of them are terrific writing team. And maybe in the past, they were a couple, unclear. Tony's married to a woman. And Bill loves to needle him about whether or not they have consummated their marriage. And so actually, that's part of where the erectile dysfunction plot line comes in, because Bill is like, well, what if Jim and Barbara like haven't had sex before? What if that's an issue?
By the way, that's Leo Bill, who
yes.
Lacey will remember from Becoming Elizabeth. He was Henry Gray.
I will take this moment to say I loved Becoming Elizabeth, and I'm so mad that it's canceled.
Justice for Becoming Elizabeth.
I do actually want to point out, though, I know that you're resting your voice, but how do you feel about this show? I'm curious.
Oh, let me just say real quick, just to wrap up the ensemble. Uh-huh. I was being very leisurely about making my ultimate point, so apologies, and thanks for your forbearance. The one straight white guy who is in that team is Clive, who plays Jim, who's going to be Barbara of Jim and Barbara. And I love that he, like the one white, rather upper crusty, plummy voiced guy who basically expects and until this point has received everything he wants in life, career, love on a platter. Like at one point he says that his mother grew up with the Mitfords. So that gives you an idea of like the social milieu that he was in. They just roast him constantly. He has terrible ideas, which they ignore, or then like take a kernel of it and turn it into something completely different, which is better every single time. I love that is another one of those things that's not like, they don't have a neon sign over everyone's heads pointing at it. It just continues to unfold as the series goes on. So sorry, Lacey, why don't you chime in?
What was the question? I am lost.
How do you like the show?
Oh,
do you like it?
How do I like it? Okay.
Yeah.
I liked it more than I thought I would, to be honest.
Great.
And I thought it was pretty, I thought it was cute. I think that the actress who plays Barbara, Gemma
Arterton.
Arterton. That's yeah. Fabulous.
It's pretty great. Yeah.
For a minute, I started to call her Gemma Whalen because there's too many Gemmas.
Oh, by the way, Gemma Whalen is going to be in season 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's not confusing at all. I thought the show was very cute.
Yes.
It was not entirely what I expected it to be, which is good, because I have to admit, this particular brand of comedy, not the comedy that this show does, but the comedy that like the show within a show does, mm-hmm. is very much not my lane. I actively hate it. So every time they start being funny is very, very cringe for me. Like, I don't think that slapstick is funny. I don't think that her falling down is funny. I just, like, that is like, you know, everybody says like sarcasm is, you know, like the lowest form of wit. Spoiler alert, it is not.
Agreed.
Falling down is the lowest form of wit. So that part for me was the hardest.
I think what really gets me is when Sophie does them unconsciously outside of the actual on-stage stuff. So, like, the one that
like
the
for,
one that
for
struck me,
it's me. It's a really weird. Like, I don't know. It feels performative in the sense that like women have to be dumb and bumbling to like be taken seriously or something. I don't know, like. She has to be like. I don't like it. I like every other part of the show except that, which is unfortunate, as that is like the main theme of the show.
I mean, she's in a no-win situation, and I do just want to back up very, very slightly to say we're calling her Barbara, and then we're also calling her Sophie, and that's not because we're confused, and it's also it's not because Annie and Lacey think that I'm in the show. It's not that.
It's her stage name.
Yes. So she acquires a really, really horrendous theatrical agent played by Rupert Everett in
the worst teeth ever.
Oh my God. Horrendous fat suit, horrendous bad fake teeth. I have so many thoughts.
Like, it's like Brendan Fraser in The Whale, but like the absolute F-list version.
It's just terrible. And I really loathe, like, number one, if it's a fat character, please just hire a fat actor. There's lots of them. They're great. They need work. You know, that needs to stop forever, forever, forever. And number two, the character, and I really loathe that, you know, it's so obvious that his, you know, we're supposed to be repulsed by him physically because he's repulsive internally. And I just, no, please don't do that. So anyway, he says to her that her name, you know, it's bad enough that she's from the North and that she's blonde and that she's hot.
I'm sorry, I have to get this joke in. Lots of planets have a North.
Exactly, they do. They do, and that should be respected. It's so all of those are bad enough. But, you know, her name being Barbara, he describes it as being like very old fashioned and provincial. And so he says, you're going to be Sophie Straw. And she reluctantly agrees, you know, but it does work for her. So we will be referring to her intermittently as either of those names.
I think of her as Sophie when she's in London.
Yeah.
And I think of her as Barbara when she goes home.
Yeah,
and that is kind of how that's kind of how my brain sort of like parsed it. And
sure.
The fact that you then did that in your recaps made it a lot easier for me to also then follow your recaps. So I'm really glad you did that.
Happy to help, everybody.
Um,
love to clarify.
And I didn't even have to like I didn't even have to like ask you to do it. You just did it, which is
awesome.
Anyway,
so yeah. I interrupted you and you were going to talk about some example about the cringe physical comedy that
okay.
I
okay. Well, no, no, no. Like there was a moment in, I think it's episode 3 or maybe it's, no, it's got to be episode 3. Because I watched all three like kind of in a row.
Yeah.
To catch up, to sort of remind myself where we were like earlier, not today, but like yesterday. But there's a moment where Dennis yells, "Everybody out of Sophie's room." And Sophie leaves with them. And,
right. And he's like, No.
Mine was the one where they're doing like their chemistry read, her and Clive, yeah. and they have to throw a football around. And it's so, 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 so horrible.
Oh.
I wanted to crawl under a bed.
Interesting.
Where she literally stuffs it up her dress to be like, "Look, I'm pregnant." I was like, "Please stop."
So the thing that I really liked about that scene, and I do absolutely take your point about like, cringe comedy is not typically my thing, but I also think that cringiness is in the eye of the beholder. So to me, what makes that scene work is that she instantly is finding ways to be funny where there might not actually have been any. Like they've written some stuff. They encourage her to just sort of like run with it, which is awesome. And then she does. And it's just like one idea after another. It reminded me a little bit, and I don't think that she is like Robin Williams in any other way. Like she seems to be on a very even keel in terms of her mental health. And I'm not concerned about her meeting a very sad fate. But like the quickness with which she just keeps riffing, and then the fact that she and the writers and the producer are all on the same page almost immediately. And it's Clive who's supposed to theoretically be the star. He's the star of their radio show. He is completely overmatched. Like, has absolutely no ability to improvise, always wants to just prepare what's on the page and deliver that content. It just, he's so totally, she just runs rings around him.
Mm-hmm. I do want to note, and this is something that, because I haven't watched beyond episode 3,
okay.
when he kind of seduces her at the, at the restaurant, I actually wondered to myself, and I don't know if this is true, but is he sort of trying to bring her down to his level by doing that?
No, you know,
I think that's giving him a lot of Machiavellian credit that I don't think his little brain deserves.
Strong agree.
He's just a dude.
He is just a dude, and she's everything. He's just Ken.
He's not Ken.
He's not even Ken. Ken has more good qualities, like, and more potential than Clive does. And I like,
Clive is not Knuff.
Clive is not Knuff. Clive needs to go back to Knuff school.
I was honestly like really, really hoping that they would keep that platonic, honestly, because I thought that was actually a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
In terms of like, of them trying to find a way to work together and play these roles that
right.
are not platonic together, but working out how to do comedy together without the
yes.
addition of sex.
Oh yeah, yeah, and I mean, and that is super interesting.
Oh no, I knew they were going to hook up the moment that they met, and the only thing that I'm really worried about is that she ends up with Dennis. Like, that's the thing I don't want to see. Is I don't want to see her end up with Dennis. I would rather see her end up with Clive and her and Dennis stay platonic than her. And Dennis stay, her and Clive stay platonic, and her end up with Dennis. Like, that is the thing that I don't want to see. Because
I mean, I realize this is not that show, but like, why does she have to get with anyone?
Right? No, I know.
Why is the Kelly Taylor option not on the table here?
Right. She could choose herself for sure.
Seriously.
Yeah, which is basically what Midge Maisel does at the end of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Like, she doesn't. There are a number of offers which she actively declines. And I'm, not that this is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I think the way I described it to my parents when I was watching the screeners, and I was like, okay, just like incoming, get ready for what's coming on PBS this winter. You know, it will scratch a little bit of that Mrs. Maisel itch, but just a little. It's trying to do a completely different thing.
I would agree with that. Yeah. But I have sort of explained it to people as, what if Mrs. Maisel, but very, very British. Honestly, and actually, it's gotten a couple of people to watch.
That's great. Yeah.
The other thing about this show that I also find to be really startling but refreshing is the fact that it is honest about race. And I was not expecting that. I really love the reporter.
Oh gosh, Diane, she's wonderful.
Diane.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I love the fact
that the club they go to looks horrendous.
Oh my god, the Coke scene.
I love there's a leitmotif in the show, like across several episodes, where Sophie is going to various clubs, some of them better and more interesting than others. It's sort of like I believe it's in almost every episode. At least 3 out of the 6, for sure. But yes, somebody offers her cocaine at this very, very schmancy hip club. And she, in order to avoid snorting it, she sneezes on the proffered bump. And the guy he's not best pleased about that. But
I mean, tough luck, bud. Honestly, there are just so many. That's the kind of comedy moment that I genuinely like, because it's so like, what do you do? And especially because it's a moment of it's a moment of like two girls like, what do I do? Mm-hmm. Don't do it.
Right. Yes.
Right. And like, that is also part of what I really love about it. And then she's like, let's split. And then two of them run.
Yeah.
And like, I love that. And I love the fact that they are friends. And I love the fact that she gets her into the club. I love everything about that. And I love, there's so many small things about this show that are delightful that I wasn't expecting. Also, you know what else I wasn't expecting about this show that really threw me? How much cursing there is.
Oh, I was gonna ask you guys, because I'm watching it on streaming. Same. And I'm like, do they bleep this on the show?
They bleep it on the on-air version, yes.
On the broadcast, they bleep it. There are a lot of warning for people who are sensitive to such things. There are a lot of F-bombs in the show.
Tons of cussing. Yeah, there's plenty of F-bombs. Also, like the C-word, which is less controversial in England than it is here. Fortunately, I didn't actually hear, and I have seen all 6, any like slurs, any racial
sexuality
slurs. I will say, like, I'm so glad that you two also, and I'm not surprised by this at all, but that you, it makes me so happy that you also really, really love Diane. Mm-hmm. What a terrific character. She's in 5 of 6 episodes. So you meet her in episode 2, and she does carry through the rest of the series, becoming more important. Like, her friendship with Sophie becomes more central to the show, and her experiences as she's by far, like, in Sophie's friendship group of herself, her delightful and hilarious roommate Marge, who also has a terrific arc as like sort of like her feminist consciousness gets raised. So the two of them and Diane, they really eventually become like a solid trio. And Diane is so much better educated than either of the two of them are. And there's no weirdness about that. Like, I think she feels maybe a little hesitant about it in some instances, but they immediately are just like, you're awesome. Like, please tell, like, she gets to be the one who introduces Sophie to, you know, some of the specifics of London culture of the era that she really needed a girlfriend to show her. Like, this is not something that Diane plays a role in, but there's a moment in the third episode, I believe, where they're filming the first Jim and Barbara episode, the first full thing. She has successfully negotiated a costume that is something she can actually move around in and is not designed to make it easy for the camera to look down her blouse into something more appropriate. And then, you know, as someone sometimes does, gets her period unexpectedly, like a week or so earlier than she anticipated. And she needs to, number one, she needs a costume change in terms of her leg wear. And number two, she needs assistance. And the costume assistant hands her a tampon and she has never used one. And the costume assistant is just flabbergasted by this. And she's like, my auntie Mari doesn't approve of them. And it, I mean, it flashed me. Honestly, like, I heard stuff like that growing up. You know, I came of age in the late 80s and I definitely heard total nonsense about how, like, that could put an end to your virginity. Like,
No. I didn't. Okay. In our house, it was not virginity. It was don't use those. It could give you toxic shock syndrome. I actually never used one until I was in college.
Wow. Yeah. I read about toxic shock syndrome because I'm one of those bizarre children who, like, read the inserts. Which,
oh, God.
Yeah, that's a whole other thing. We don't need to get into that now. But I will read.
It's okay. I was obsessed with those Time Life books about how people, like, about, like, the Bermuda Triangle or how people got, like, premonitions to not get on a plane and then the plane crashed.
I was also very obsessed with those, but I did not have the Time Life books to, like, bolster my paranoia. But I did read about the TSS and I asked my mom about it and she was like, honey, just change it like every 4 to 6 hours. Literally just follow the instructions. Like, yes, that is serious, but it only is going to be a factor if you don't use them correctly.
Don't read.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna change the subject and spare all the men listening to this show before they die. You know, Greg is our number one hype man, and I just feel like he's gonna fast forward this.
I want to get back to the. I do want to get back to Diane real quick because I just want to point out. Because it is my job to point out, like, where have you seen this actor before? That actress is actually it's the lead girl from Children of Men. If you guys remember that movie.
With Clive Owen.
Yes, it's the girl who played Key, the pregnant girl from that movie.
I did not know that. Yes. Wow. I loved that movie. It was great.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, I wanted to point out because I was like, you were like, I don't know any of these people. And I'm like, we do. Okay. So yeah, anyway. So there you go.
She's wonderful. I love that character. And I had the pleasure of interviewing Claire Hope Ashty right before the holidays, and no surprises here. Like, she's enormously thoughtful and insightful. And later I realized, like, I checked her Wikipedia entry for a particular detail. It turns out that she did her undergrad work in, like, sociology and anthropology. So, like, if I ever get the chance to talk to her again, I want to ask her about, like, how that, you know, does her prior, you know, collegiate work influence, you know, her work as an actor? Because it's sort of like, you know, how do you plumb the depths of a person, you know, and think about them in their social context?
Oh, and for the record, also, Clive was the lead in Beecham House, and that's why he sucked. Because Beecham House sucked. All right. Anyway.
That show was truly awful. I will never not take an opportunity to talk about how bad that show was. Disaster.
Okay. Anyway.
I have never even heard of that show, but it sounds like I should be grateful for my ignorance in this case.
Oh, you should be. Leslie Nichols plays the most racist character I've ever seen. It was so, so sad.
Wow. That is very alarming. Yeah, yes. I will say one more. I just want to revisit one more thing about Auntie Mari, which is, like, so everybody who's a villain in this show to one degree or another, and I count the incompetent director, Bert, who fortunately we only have to endure for one episode.
Oh my gosh, when he, like, legit points a camera down her shirt, I was like, please throw that man off.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I realize that I'm an easy mark for being enraged by this type of behavior. However, I was glad that he was a fictional character separated from me by time and space and reality. Because I don't wish to do murders. Like, I really don't. I am committed to civil society and the social contract. But this show did try me, and in addition to the vile and loathsome Bert, we have the vile and loathsome Brian, the theatrical agent, whose wife is played by the wonderful Morwenna Banks. She's
so
good.
Who is the writer on this show?
She's also the writer. She writes this show. She also is a writer on Slow Horses. I will watch anything she ever writes or acts in. What a total delight. She needs more time on screen. just love her. Clive, I consider a villain. Ted Sargent, the obnoxious executive who says he's rarely ever met a beautiful woman who is also funny, which just says so much more about him than literally any woman he's ever spoken with in his life. And Auntie Mari, who the thing that makes me not completely hate Auntie Mari is the degree to which we learn about how she has chosen, because I think she was perhaps unaware that other options existed, and the people who exercised other options, like her former sister-in-law, Barbara's mother, the way that she violated the social contract, I think just horrified Auntie Mari to such a degree and made her think that she had to make certain choices, and of course resents them, and of course that comes out in these horrible sort of like emotional vomit situations that, Annie, I completely agree with you, she is abusive towards Barbara. It's
absolutely, and my favorite moment is that moment when it is when the dad turns around and says, shut it.
Yeah,
shut it. She's going back to London. Shut it.
He tried to do it more easily. He tried to do it more gently. Like, she, just because we didn't get to do certain things doesn't mean that she shouldn't, you know, let the young people pursue things. Things are different for them now. It doesn't have to be the way that it used to be. He's lovely. And I do like that the show shows that, like, his sister's obsession with social niceties and sort of trying to attain a standing that people in the South would never, ever let them claim, is harmful for everyone. Like, she, in her mind, she's taking really good care of her brother, who was sadly abandoned by his wife. But in fact, all of her caretaking it's bad for her mentally and emotionally, as we never cease to hear. And you can see how it's bad for Barbara, but we also see a little more subtly how bad it is for her brother, George, who does not know how to cook, does not know how to clean, you know, is so laid back. Like, it's to the point of passivity in everything but his sincere and skillful parenting of Barbara.
Honestly, like, I was a little surprised that Banks cast herself as the wife of the evil dude. I was a little like, really? Because I think I was sort of expecting her character to also be evil.
She's definitely not. And she gets to do some more interesting stuff as the show goes on.
Yeah. And so when we met Patsy, I was sort of like, oh, God, they're both going to be, well, okay.
Yeah, no, they have a very, we saw you from across the bar and we really like your vibe.
Oh, 100%. I really admire Barbara for picking up on immediately. Like, she's just like, no. And then Patsy is like, well, we're not here to pick you up for kinky sex. And like, the situation requires a Patsy to say that, because Brian thinks he's doing one thing, but Patsy and Barbara can see that he's doing something completely other, or that could be easily interpreted as something completely other. But yeah, it's Patsy who saves him, honestly, from being the absolute worst version of that guy.
I have to say that of all of the shows that they have put with this slew of January hits, I think this might, as much as I love Vienna Blood, and I do.
Same.
I think this might be my favorite to fit with the group.
I think you have a much bigger need for that than I do. It's very strange. Like, I don't really care if these shows go together or not. Like, mostly because we live in an era where I'm not watching all three of them at the same time, so I don't need them to be in conversation with each other in any real way.
Yeah.
See, to me that is important because
nobody's watching them like that anymore, though. Welcome to 2024.
Okay, maybe that is how you see it. But I do actually think that when you schedule a night of television together, even if people don't watch it together, you are trying to say something. And I do genuinely feel that that is a thing. Now, maybe that's not truly the way it was, but honestly, I think, especially for a network like PBS, which is public broadcasting and is here to say things and is here to have conversations and is trying to be a little bit more more intellectual than, say, like, I don't know, Cartoon Network. That's mean. Sorry, Adult Swim. That was mean of me. I do expect it to have some sort of theme like that. And I think that to me really does sort of matter in a way. That being said, I really like this show and I want more shows like this, even with all the cursing.
Oh, yes. Yes. I to me, the cursing is not a bug. It's a feature. I think that it is much more reflective of the way that people talk in real life. You know, we don't do that here on this podcast, but that's because, as you have previously put it and charmingly put it, we keep it PBS here, which, you know, I think that there's places for both of those things. And I like that. Yeah, like the idea that people in the that we are so much more vulgar than people were in the past. I'm sorry, that is simply not borne out in the historical record. And I see no reason for it to be removed from our TV. Like if we're showing historical anything. I think it's fine to have shows where there isn't cussing. And I think it's also actually probably good for there to be shows that have it in abundance.
HBO has desensitized me to all this.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Anybody who actually hangs out with me in real life will tell you that I have a potty mouth anyway. So, try to restrain it for this show.
Right. Right.
Yeah. I grew up.
I go to confession about it. Leave me alone.
Oh. Everybody needs to handle these things in ways that are meaningful to them. End of.
When I forget to code switch and I actually just talk like me, I swear like a sailor, which is why I have to at all times at work keep my code switching on. Otherwise, like, people stare at me like, what the hell just happened and who the frick are you?
Yeah, no, it's very good to have multiple ways of communicating in the world for different audiences. Know your audience. That's all. That's all. Yeah. Do you guys have questions that I can answer in a non-spoilery way, or like predictions / wish lists for ways that you would love to see the show go? And I will not say whether it does or not.
Well, my one thing is I would like less cringe comedy, but I'm not going to get that. So I'm not going to ask for it. I would actually like to see more of Dennis's wife. I am fascinated by that relationship.
Yes.
And how, like, understandably kind of awful she is.
Yeah.
I mean, she was really a little bit, she was like a lot, I think, in the few scenes that she got. But also, I think her lotness is justified.
Yes. Yes. Like, I think similarly to Auntie Mari, like, she's certainly more sympathetic than Auntie Mari is, like, initially. And Auntie Mari doesn't become sympathetic exactly, but I understand her better and my views about her are less harsh as time goes on. But yes, Edith, who plays the wife of producer and eventually director Dennis Mahindra, the two of them are very well-educated posh types. I think Bill refers to them as like Oxbridge Mafia at some point. And someone asks, is that real? And he says, it's real if you didn't go there. So they watch the first episode of Jim and Barbara at her and Dennis's house, which is amazing. Like, it's not just the obviously nice location and the obviously, like, it's large. Like, that's a big house in central London, and it is so gorgeously appointed. I was like, I would like to know where they got all of those, like, all those pieces of chinoiserie. Like, where did they come from? Anyway, they are, yeah, so they're, you
they're
know.
They're the like lot that inherited it.
Yeah, so they are, like, very obviously supposed to be a perfectly matched set. But yeah, as Lacey pointed out, there's stuff going on under the surface that you will learn more about.
Yeah. The thing about is that it's very obvious that the wife is so that she has the same drive as Sophie, that she is just as aggressive in her own way. She's just more openly aggressive, you know, for all that Barbara is naive when she arrives in London, and for all that we sort of see her learn to use that naivete to get what she wants and kind of manipulate people into doing what she needs. The thing about Dennis's wife is that she's never been naive. And so she's just bullheaded in a way, because she's always got, you know, it's sort of like Clive. She's always gotten what she wanted. And when she's told she's not allowed to have that because she's female, she's like, no, I'm just going to keep walking straight through that, and that thing's right. going to fall down.
Right.
And there's a level where, you know, I think Dennis was probably very, very attracted to that when he first met her.
Yeah.
And I assume that is a lot of the reasons why he's very attracted to Sophie now, is that he sees that same aggression in her, but much more subtle. And that there's probably, like, that's part of the crush that's going on there. And it's part of why I also don't want the two of them to get together, even though I'm probably going to be wrong on that. I really don't want them to get together. I'm not going to lie.
I don't either. I want everybody to stay platonic.
I want everybody to kiss.
I mean, normally that is my position on almost every show I've ever watched,
but not this one.
I'm like, can we just have this not be about that?
Correction, I wouldn't mind Bill and Tony getting together. There we go.
So let me just ask Lisey real quick, what is it about, and actually you too, Annie, like, what is it about this particular show, if you are like me, someone who's like, oh, I ship this, I ship that?
I mean, Annie's probably not the person for this, but I
oh, okay. Okay. Yes. So what is it about this show that makes you, that is making you feel this way, that is contrary to your usual way?
I think it's, I'm not sure, because normally, I mean, I am infamous for shipping literally everything, and sometimes characters that have barely interacted on screen are the ones that I read the most fan fiction about.
Right.
But I don't know. I feel like this show is more interesting if it's about, when I say the work, I sound like I'm Jackson Pollock or something.
No,
but
I don't
mean it like that. Like, yeah. I mean, like, I think this show is more interesting when it's about the dynamics of what they're all trying to make together.
Yeah.
Rather than what they're all trying to do to each other.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. Yeah. And I think they're...
Because you know what? I can see someone fall in love with their boss that's technically married on like five other shows.
That's true.
The thing is, Lacey, that is exactly how I feel about Miss Girl and the Duke.
You shut your mouth.
I'm gonna say though, no, like I am usually the person who is very anti-shipping, and honestly it's the same thing here. Like I don't want to see Sophie get with, I didn't want to see Sophie get with Clive, and I don't want to see Sophie get with Dennis. I want to see Sophie be Sophie and choose herself, and I want to see her conquer all of these boys and just walk all over them.
I mean, I'm not normally a huge proponent of the Kelly Taylor option. I was team Brenda. But I was team Brenda originally, and then I think I was team Brandon during the great Kelly situation. But yeah, it is odd for me to not have a rooting interest in that vein. I also think part of it is that they're telegraphing the Dennis thing so unsubtly.
Oh, yes.
That's really annoying to me because it feels lazy, especially when they have a lot more like, his marriage is interesting to me. Like, maybe that marriage is not going to last forever or whatever, but putting the wife in a way that kind of feels like a weird roadblock is not something that I think is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, like, she is, in terms of, like, technical and legality speaking, she is a roadblock, but that's not her fault. Like, she's not responsible for that. And you do get a much deeper and more interesting understanding of her and of their relationship as a whole as time goes on.
Mm. Annie, back to your Miss Scarlet comment for a second, because it made me think of something. I feel like so much of that show is predicated on that relationship, though, regardless of how you feel about them getting together or not. Like, a huge chunk of that show's reason for existence is the two of them.
True.
That is not this show.
That's true.
The show does not need either of those pairings to, like, fulfill its fundamental mission,
true,
if you will.
True.
And I think the fundamental mission is more interesting if it doesn't, like, it's so obvious about the Dennis thing. And it's just like, it's not, it's, meh.
It's not a subtle show.
No.
Like, that's not what it's for.
No, that is very true. If anything, what I would love to see is for Sophie and Bill to room together. And, like, become besties. Like, that would be the thing that I would love.
I would say, like, I love, just as I loved the trio of Sophie, Diane, and Marge, I love the trio of Sophie, Tony, and Bill, which also gets more interesting and deeper as it goes on, like, as she truly becomes their friend. And, like, I just, one of my favorite moments, like, it's so, yes, she and Bill absolutely should live together. I think that would be very, very funny, and that it would give his character the opportunity to be emotionally earnest in a way that we get to see a little bit of. I would like to see more. Like, his role is frequently just to, like, reduce Clive to cinders, which of course I approve of heartily, and then to kind of, like, bitchily mock Tony, who he loves very much. Like, the two of them have a great friendship, but yeah, like, there is a lot of, like, the sort of stereotypically caustic gay guy in that character, at least when we first meet him, and I'm really curious, I'm hopeful about what the second season holds for both of them. But yeah, it would be very funny for the two of them to live together. Yeah.
I do have to say that Matthew Beard is very good at that. He was very good at it in Magpie Murders.
Yes.
And I assume he'll be great at it again when he comes back in Moonflower Murders.
Yes, same. I think he actually has really, really underrated comedy chops. Okay. Like, to me, the funniest bits that he did in Magpie Murders are where he doesn't actually have any lines, but he's on camera and has to find, like, little bits of business to do and facial expressions to make it clear, like, what... Oh, that poor, poor, sweet, dumb baby James is thinking. he's very, very good at that. And the two of them have a much speedier comedic chemistry than Sophie has with anybody else. Like, when he asks if she's seen Clive's Coriolanus, she says, no, I got the vaccine. Like, and there is no pause. Like, it almost sounds as if it was something they had written in advance, but it's actually just they are on the same wavelength comedically. Like, each of them is as fast as the other.
I don't think Clive would have made a particularly good Coriolanus. I'm just going to put that out there.
No, I don't. Clive is pretty-ish. That's as much as I can say about him. He's not Knuff. Just to revisit our original point, and I think we were right. He's not Knuff.
He's not Knuff.
Not Knuff. Is there anything else on your wish list? I know we got to wrap this up for the sake of Mark and our listeners.
I don't think so. I think other than I'm looking forward to season two.
Oh, strong same. Strong same. I think they rushed a little bit in the end, but I forgive it because I had a feeling that they were gonna bring a second season, and lo, it came to pass, and I was pleased.
I think that's our show.
All
is
right,
our show?
Yeah, that's our show.
That is our show. Funny Woman is currently streaming in full on PBS Passport. So if you just want to binge the whole thing, it does go down very easily.
Real
I watched
smooth.
three in a row last night, and it's very briskly paced and. Not too terribly taxing mentally, so it's, like, not a bet. We're having a snow day here today as we record.
Same.
We have, like, real snow, which, as we live in a snow hole here in the DC area, is not always a given. So it's not, it's not a bad show for a day like today. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to try to keep this ending thing short because I am tired, as I am always tired. But Sophie, thank you so much for joining us as per usual.
Thank you so much for having me. What a treat.
Tell the people where they can find you and more of your thoughts on the internet.
Sure. So, as Annie has said, I'm recapping this show. So you can find me weekly right now over on televisions.org. I freelance a lot for Vulture. And you can just Google Sophie Brookover. I'm, as far as I know, the first and only of my name. And I co-write a weekly newsletter of cultural recommendations and criticism with my wonderful friends Karen Corday and Margaret Willison. That is Two Bossy Dames, and you can find that at twobossydames.substack.com.
Dun-dun. Annie, your turn.
I'm going to point out that's Three Bossy Dames, but I suppose the math will somehow work that out.
We didn't major in math.
Okay, that's fine. You can find me at Annie Bundle. I'm basically at Annie Bundle everywhere. And that's Blue Sky and Threads and Facebook and any place that isn't Twitter, because I'm not on Twitter anymore, even though I still squat on my handle. You can find me. I'm the associate editor here at Televisions, and I also freelance around the web, Primetimer, MSNBC, etc. If you want to know what I wrote this week, just Google me, because I basically come up because I'm the only one of me that exists as far as I know.
Huzzah. I'm Lacey MB on all the things that allow you to choose your own username. I think I am also first of my name, Queen of the Undying or whatever it is. But I don't know. I write about a lot of things in a lot of places, including here at Television. So if you would like to read any of that or just tell me your thoughts on other things, I've got a surprising amount of useful tips from people on social media, so like please do send those my way as well. I love talking to people. If you just want the site and the pod, we are at televisions.org, where we have news, updates, listicles, recaps, reviews, interviews, many other things that I am just blanking on at this moment because, as I said, I am tired. If you have thoughts you would like to share with us about Funny Woman or anything else, we are televisions@weta.org. That is our show. If you would like to help us make more of these things, you can click that donate button that's right up top on the website, and that'll help you get access to VBS Passport so you can watch the rest of this season of Funny Woman. Thanks, everybody, for listening to our slightly supersized conversation this week. We hope that you are all warm, safe, as relatively free from illness as we can be when literally everybody I know seems to be sick right now. Please, like, get your COVID booster. Mask up if you're going to be, like, in a crowded area. This variant sucks. And I speak from extremely recent experience. So take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we will see you next week.